Blog Talk Radio.
Unbothered, impermeable, unbothered, impermeable, unbothered. I'm the people's champ, Obama, and you don't understand, Melania. Permeable, unbothered, sick, allergic to the con artist. Fake woke, an imposter, only real ones up in my roster. Like Junior C, that's my roster. You know, I just been barred up. I've been high, my shit been barred up. I've been high, my shit been
barred up. People that live these streets don't mind the road being bad.
Hey, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
Oh, I can't believe it's Tuesday, 2 weeks again. I say this every single episode.
That's so crazy.
I don't know how the time goes by so fast.
I know.
Bye.
But
particularly when you're having fun.
Fun times. Oh, man. What a Tuesday. I think we've experienced every season in New York this week so far. I know it's been winter, spring, near summer, rainy. We haven't seen snow yet, so I think we've avoided a couple of seasons.
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm really talking to the family about now is that there are two things that we must become aware of. Those that know me, you all know me. I'm very much into culture. I'm very much into knowing who you are. But
really?
When you look into the future, oh, yeah, there are two things that we have to focus on if we're going to survive. As a human family, I'm not even talking about black folks. Two things. One of them is climate change. You better understand what's happening when it comes to climate change. It is happening. It is a reality, and it has happened before in history. It's not even like it hasn't happened. The problem is the people who are in charge right now have never been around long enough to have gone through the cycle. African folk are so ancient. We have gone through the Ice Age. We've gone through the creation of the deserts in the world. So we have gone through the cycle to know that nature and the way in which the earth rotates around the sun, there are direct differences. We are dealing with a people that have never been around. We don't know. What you're experiencing now is going to start to get warmer. There's going to come a time, and I just did a webinar on climate change. There's going to come a time when the temperatures may go up at least proportionately about 25 degrees.
Wow.
So that wintertime that may have a 33 degree, which is kind of cold, that you add 25 degrees to that, and that's what winter is going to look like all the time.
I wouldn't mind. I would not mind.
But imagine what summertime, if it's 80 degrees.
Never mind.
You add 25 degrees.
Never mind.
It's not just the winter, although you're right. I would appreciate and enjoy that weather because you know how I feel about warm weather. But you also got to look at the fact that it's going to also be 25 degrees more at the hottest point in time.
Oh, no.
And so climate change is something that we've been, and, you know, they just, you know, the reason why in conjunction with what you just said, I just read an article and I also saw a newspaper article where they were talking about the importance of teaching climate change in the classroom. They want to bring climate change into the classroom.
How can you bring climate change into the classroom when there's people that don't believe it exists?
Well, that's the whole thing. The same way, how can you teach the life history of life coming from Africa when there are religions that don't believe in it? You've got to make it science. You have to make it science, and you've got to look at it from an investigatory perspective. Teach it like this is what's happening. People can't handle that, particularly people that don't believe it. But if you propose a theory, people can't argue with that because you're not trying to get people to believe it. You're just offering this scientific – and when it's January or let's say it's February 17th or 18th, and you go outside and it's 56 degrees, common sense mm-hmm. tells you something's up here.
You would think something's that. That's what I, you know, it's 48, you know, it's 48, almost 50-something degrees, and then the next day it's 25, 19 degrees. Like, how is it possible that it's such a stark difference from one day to the
That's
next?
That's right. That's right. You can have snow in the morning, and it turns to rain in the afternoon. And that has to do with climate, not weather. See, there's a difference between weather and climate. That's why when you hear these people say, oh, did you see how cold it was? And they're talking about that there's a warming trend. They don't even have common sense. There's a difference between weather and climate. Weather, we go through four seasons. There are places in the world that go through three seasons. Climate is something that is more permanent, and it has to do with the Earth's rotation around the sun and the relationship of that and what happens on the Earth in cyclical. The other thing I just wanted to mention that I think is very important we better look at is artificial intelligence. Those phones and computers that you're carrying around, it becomes very important as black folk to understand that programs could be coded to be racist. Programs could be coded, and I know it for a fact because when I used to be on teams that would be hiring people, hiring teachers, and interviewing for principals, that was one of the things that I used to do. What we had were stacks. And there would be 12 of us around the table. They had stacks. And I'm going to take it away from that to just look at it from another perspective. Say you're going out to look for a job. You send in your application and your resume. The people that receive your resume already have what they want in place. So they say, I want somebody who has a master's degree. When you go through the applications, everybody that doesn't have a master's degree, you just toss their application. You don't have to do anything with color, background. You could be black, Hispanic, Asian, white, European. And if you don't have a master's degree, your application is tossed.
Mm.
Now, what happens when programs are coded in order to because a lot of people submit their resumes now on the computer. What happens if coding your program so that black folk can't get there? They code it so that maybe where you live, it could even be as dangerous as actually saying if you're African American or if you're Hispanic American, get rid of all the Hispanic names. So the moment you hand in your application, there is no way to tell. That's why artificial intelligence is so very dangerous, and we have to learn because there's an upside to artificial intelligence that's absolutely wonderful. But there is mm-hmm. a downside that is horrible. It's not what it is. It's what you do with what it is that's important.
That's true. Yeah.
Every tool is a weapon, and every weapon can be made into a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And so between climate change and artificial intelligence, we as a people better start studying.
We have
and
to acknowledge
getting an understanding
it first,
of what we're facing. Well, listen, I'm looking for 3 out of 100. I ain't got time to convince you.
Right.
You know, I'm looking for 3 out of 100. If you're not ready to get on board, I respect you. And the Creator knows I love you dearly. I just don't have time for you right now because there's too many people that want to do this that I can talk
mm-hmm.
to. And I just don't need a lot of people right now. I just need 3 out of 100.
Better for quality over quantity.
That's about, well, you know, nations are not built on numbers.
Right.
Great nations are not built in large numbers. A lot of the great nations were built 3 out of 100.
That's kind of what the Electoral College is built. Not necessarily quality, but it's definitely not built on quantity. I mean, it kind of is, but they value the type of state it is as opposed to the actual, like, people that are voting.
Rich.
I don't know if that makes sense.
European. If you're rich, land-owning, European Christians also known as WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. That's what America was built for, and that is why the Electoral College was put in place, just for this.
That makes sense.
And if I were them, I would do the same thing. If I thought
just
like that, them.
They're women. But their women don't even realize that they don't matter either.
Hey, but the thing is when you've been brainwashed, you've been brainwashed.
That's true.
But when you mention that.
We don't realize
that,
it either.
and we don't. The human family, the mind is a very interesting, complex muscle that houses an invisible force known as the mind. That transforms and creates and embellishes the soul. And it's just a very, and being in education and being around people and always being in a cerebral state of mind because of education, I've come to realize certain things about the human mind. My own, first and foremost, my own. But also I've analyzed other people's minds. And it's just interesting how people's minds work.
Mm-hmm.
But just wanted to
how their mind works and doesn't work.
And how it shuts down. You know, I can go into a church, and if I use the word evolution, everybody would shut me down. If I decided to go into a church and use the term life's history, people would be attentive. The word and evolution and life history is the same thing. I'm talking about the same thing.
That's amazing.
But there are clue words.
Where you're going.
Evolution is one. There's a lot of different clue words when it comes to race, when it comes to gender. You know, when you look at the origins and the purposes behind the development of the Me Too movement, it's a phenomenal thing. We talk about the European woman suffrage movement, the right to vote. We don't talk about the black folk involved, like Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth and even Frederick Douglass.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about that. But when you deal with Susan B. Anthony and all the others, we don't even talk about Ida B. Wells. Now, that's what everybody should know. But be that as it may, the concept that you're dealing with is you use the word Me Too, automatically it changes the conversation. And that's because nobody knows the origin of the word Me Too. Everybody got a hold of it when European women began to use it.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So it takes on a whole, and so you use that word Me Too. First of all, you don't even know it's a black thing.
Yep.
And second of all, it has a negative connotation according to who you're talking to, or it has a positive connotation. And according to how your mind is wired, determines how you're going to receive that word. And so that's something that we all have to consider and think about. Human mind is a phenomenal thing. And again, it's not the mind that's the problem. It's how you use it.
We are definitely going to have to make this, this is going to have to be something that we discuss, because the human mind is something that ties into what we're talking about today. But I think that everybody listening, we're going to talk about something else, but I'm sure that everybody listening is very interested, including myself. I probably won't even talk when you talk about that. I mean, you know, I'll probably add something. But that is definitely a topic that I think that we should, you know, discuss further, because this topic today is different. But just talking about the weather, brought us into a different topic. So, you know,
you all used to always tell me that I, you know, that I was the most random person you ever knew.
And I bet you could have tied all of that into the topic that we're going to be discussing today, which I know you are very familiar with, sir and sister. You are relatively familiar, just with the official topic. And I'm a fish. I am. What word did I just use?
Familiar.
I'm familiar. Yeah. I'm like, what word did I just use? I am familiar with the concept of it without the legality as of yet. So I think that it's going to be a very interesting conversation. Did you want to add anything else to what you were saying, Daddy, or do you want to get into the topic? Because I don't even want to cut you off, but, huh?
No, please. Let's get into the topic. We can always follow up at a later date.
We're definitely going to have to discuss this further. So what I would like to do, if I can find it, is play the clip. And I think, is this it? Oh, here we go. Okay, so I'm going to play this. I randomly find things on YouTube, and I found this, and I thought it would be a really interesting topic because the conversation was so interesting. And I feel like he's one of the most motivational people I've ever heard. So we're going to, it's a couple of minutes. So it's a number of minutes, but it's very interesting. So I'm going to play it, and we'll be back shortly.
Hey, 20 years, though.
20 years, I know. 20 years of marriage together for 23.
Wow.
Yo, hardcore.
How do you do it, Will?
Hey, man, you just...
I'm on 13, man.
Yo, 13. No, 13 is good. Now, me and Jada... It's funny, Ruby Dee died a few years ago, and her and Ozzy Davis have been together for 50 years.
Yeah.
So me and Jada was struggling hard, so we went to go talk to Ruby Dee. So we sit down, and Ruby, she's just, you know, when people have that look, like when they just... You just understand they get life. They got it. Right. You don't know what it is, but you can just see the look where they got it, and Ruby got that look, and she's sitting... So Ruby turns to Jada, and she said, how long you known him? And Jada said, at the time it was 17 years. She said, I've known him for 17 years. Ruby said, 17 years? Shit, you don't even know him yet.
Wow.
Right? She said, just relax. And that was her whole advice. She's like, you don't even know him yet. And it was like the idea that 17 years, you don't even know him yet. And that is so... deeply true. It's like, as much as marriage is a relationship commitment, it really is a singular commitment to yourself that you are going to use your marriage to develop yourself, right? Marriage demands that you be the best version of you, or it ain't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, that she, you know, Ruby really locked us into that space where Jada and I realized that we were on individual journeys. We were both trying to force a marriage when actually, you know, if you know, you think of us in terms of a seed and soil, are they married? Right? Is a seed, it's not married to the soil, it's just growing together, both doing what they were designed to do. And me and Jada sort of found ourselves into that space where we don't even say we're married anymore. We refer to ourselves as life partners, right? Where you get into that space when you realize you are literally with somebody for the rest of your life. There's no deal breakers. There's nothing she could do ever. Nothing that would break our relationship. She has my support till death. You know what I mean? And it feels so good to get to that space where you're not complaining and worrying and demanding that a person be a certain thing to sort of satiate your ego deficiencies, you know? You're not demanding that somebody be a certain thing so you feel better about yourself, you know? And we've sort of come into this really beautiful place. She said a couple of months ago, she said, you know what? People think love is red. It's not. It's blue. It's like water. It's not like fire, right? Yeah. And I was like, it's just such a deep concept. And, you know, coming in into that space, this I've never been happier. And I hate using the word happy because it really doesn't describe what I am, right? It's like happiness is peace. It's not pleasure, right? And everybody thinks happiness is trying to get as much pleasure as you can get. There is nothing more agitating to your mind than extreme pleasure.
Right.
Right? It's like And it's like you just come into that beautiful state of needlessness where you realize you really don't need nothing.
Right.
You know, and I'm ecstatic, you know, and in the peace of my life right now.
As a father, coming from Trey to you. And it also seems like when you look at Jaden and Willow, you seem like you have the most coolest, free-thinking kids, powerful kids in their own right, powerful young man and woman.
No, but what was beautiful for Jada and I is we actually had nieces and nephews that, you know, we were raising along the way, you know. So, you know, you sort of mess the kids up incrementally less as you move along the line. Like Willow got the best of the best, right? So you just get it more and more right as you move through the kids. You know, but it's been parenting is especially girls. It's like there's, you know, with boys are easy.
Right.
Like until they can beat you in a fight, like they got to do what you say.
Right.
You know, it's real simple. You know, you just hurry up and you check them real good when they're young, you know, so by the time when they can take you, they don't feel like they have to.
Yeah.
Right. But with girls, it's a Willow has been like the most challenging, most beautiful relationship I've ever had in my life. Willow got the best of me that any human being has ever gotten. And it is, you know, it's just a beautiful thing to watch her develop and know how to love her better than I've ever been able to love anybody. And it's there's a thing I was talking about what Willow taught me. Just I used to define love, and I grew up with the definition of love being that you push and you mold and you jam people into achieving and building and growing. And you know what I realized with Willow, I sort of shifted from I guess what I would call the desire and pleasure paradigm of love. If somebody does what you say, you desire something, you want them to behave a certain way. And if they behave that way, you love them, right? So that's sort of the desire, pleasure paradigm of love. Hey, you know, I'm going to give you this, and then you're going to behave like this, and we're going to love each other, right? Mm-hmm. And Willow sort of shifted me into more what I call the gardener flower paradigm of love, where the flower already is what God intends.
Mm-hmm.
It's a seed, and I take out what I want it to be, release what I want. I want it to be what it's intended to be,
right?
So my definition of love shifted to a gardener. I just want to create a place, and I want to have water, and I want you to become what you want to become. I'm not going to demand that you become what I want you to become.
Right.
And that was sort of the evolution and transition for me into loving Willow, and then ultimately everybody around me in helping them become what they want to become, not demanding that they be what I see in my picture.
Well,
that was 7 minutes of, I literally don't even know where that was. I just randomly saw that particular clip on YouTube, and it was one of the best 7 minutes of my life, and I found it so interesting for so many different reasons, and it reminds me a lot of things that Daddy has said before and things that I am learning. And things that I find most difficult when I don't do in my own relationship. A lot of times when you, and sometimes even when you put people up on a pedestal and you make that, in your head, they seem to be perfect and you're a better person because of somebody else, but they're still not perfect because they have their own concern. So a lot of times, a lot of our downfall is seeing someone for how they make you feel and not realizing that they're a human being also. And I think those are parents too. You know, I realized mommy and daddy weren't perfect when I became an adult and when I became a parent. I realized if I can be emotionally unstable in certain situations and certain points and certain times and doing certain things, what right do I have to not allow my parents to be emotionally unstable until they come into themselves also? So I think that a lot of times we put parents on pedestals. Like we it takes a lot to realize parents are human also. And it took me well into my 20s to realize my parents were human. I thought parents were parents. But there comes a point when somebody says something and it triggers something and you realize that if there was ever a mistake that your parents made or you felt like they made, they're still human beings. And when I realize the errors that I make, I understand how it is that parents can make the same mistakes. So, and I think that the best thing that he said, and people make fun of Will and Jada's kids all the time, but they are who they are because their parents love them unconditionally. A lot of times parents love their kids conditionally, and as long as they're who the vision, what the vision was that they were supposed to be in their head, then they love them. But I think that that is one of the best ways to describe a relationship and what should be a relationship with your child is to be a gardener and a flower. Your child was born. Your child wasn't born to be what you wanted them to be. Your child was born for you to flower them and to water them and watch them grow and to assist them in growing. Because as a gardener, you're supposed to be an expert on flowers. So as a parent, you are supposed to be more of an expert on life than your child. But the flower is still a flower. You just have to help them grow into the best and most healthy flower that they can be. So I just found that 7 minutes, what was it, 7 minutes and 40 seconds? Like everything that comes out of Will Smith's mouth is like, he's a very special person. Like everything that he says is like, how did a human being say this? But I just, like, I had to share that with everybody, and I really wanted us to have that conversation because I know, Daddy, you've had that conversation. I know Mommy's in the car. You know, Candace, you have yours. I have mine. Like, we all have our individual relationships and life experiences, so I really think that it's important because as you were discussing earlier, Daddy, about us understanding through evolution and through climate change and through everything that you were discussing, if we can't have the basic foundation of a partnership, there's no way that we can move forward and work together and do something in the future of humanity. So I just, you know, what do you guys think?
No, I think that was amazing. I think the whole conversation is important because, like he was saying, people think love and relationships are a certain way, and it's just like a lot of times people don't realize that there are ups and downs. They think, and you know, a lot of it I think has to do with the way in which we're able to voice, you know, how we feel and stuff like that. And I think growing up, we were able to see the good, the bad. You may have a disagreement on one thing, but it doesn't make the whole cookie crumble. Like, you know, that's just life. That's how relationships go, regardless if it's a romantic relationship, a friendship, or family situation. Like, you're not always going to agree with the person, but as long as you have enough respect to respect their thoughts and their feelings, that's the most important. Because, you know, if everybody had the same opinion on everything, that would not be a fun situation. You're attracted to, you know, people that might not necessarily agree everything with what you believe in. And just talking about, you know, relationship-wise in particular, just to isolate it, like, you're going to have disagreements, but as long as you respect one another and there's a partnership and there is, you know, constant open communication, that is where it is. And, you know, Will Smith did an amazing job at just explaining, you know, and what was it, Cicely Tyson? Who was it that, who he spoke with, and he said, I've known her for 19 years, and she was like, well, you don't even know her yet. It's true. It's very true. Like,
Ruby D.
Ruby D.
Ruby D.
Yeah. So it's like you really, like, people are so, we're in a day and age where everything is so quick. So, like, you get married, or you meet a person, you get in a relationship quickly. And then from that relationship, you get married quickly. And from that marriage, you start to have your family, you start to, you know, go through the years. And
Therefore, we're no longer together. Oh, we didn't hear what you said. We didn't hear what you said.
Oh, wait. What did you hear?
Oh, man. I don't even know where it dropped. I don't even know where it dropped off because I was trying to. You were talking about we meet people and we get married and
oh yeah, no,
I
we meet people and we so quickly get married and we forget that it takes some time to build. It takes, you know, years for you to see your partner's true self. Like, and it takes years for you to even realize yourself how you feel and what you want and where you're going. And, you know, it's very interesting how, you know, this thing we call life is, because we may think we want one thing, we're attracted to the same sort of people, and they all keep being, you know, people that we not necessarily, you know, gel with, but we keep going to them. And it's relationships are a give and take. And, you know, sometimes people come into your lives and you don't even realize that that's the person for you because you're looking for something else.
It's also hard because a lot, you know, in my opinion, I think that sometimes people are looking for something that's perfect and something that I don't want to do this until this happens and I don't want to do that. But a lot of times you know, people want to do it in a succession. Like, they want to meet the person, they want to get to know each other, they want to get married, they want to live together. But sometimes, you know, and I'm speaking personally, sometimes it's not, because everybody has a right to how they feel, and neither is right or wrong. But you, sometimes, in my opinion, like, you have to get to know somebody. Living with somebody is one of the most interesting things, because you are two completely different people that have to share one space, regardless of how big it is. You have to make decisions, and, you know, even with marriage, you're not going to understand how it feels to be legally tied to somebody until it happens. You're making decisions that come from a big picture, futuristic kind of thing. Sometimes when you're not married, you don't have to make a big picture decision, you know, unless you have kids and things like that. But sometimes you can just pick up and walk away and never, you know, never have to deal with the person again. I know that it's possible with marriage, but there's a lot of decisions. You have to be able to be partners even if you're madly in love with somebody. You have to be able to be business partners, in a sense, with people, because you're making financial decisions. So if you're with somebody that you're not able to work with as a partner, and I'm not talking about a partner like, you know, when you say that's my partner, I'm talking about privately, if you're not able to work together as a partner, it's impossible to create a relationship, because a relationship is more than being in love. And I've said this before, I believe that you should be in love with the person that you are with. I don't believe in staying with people for any other reason besides a foundation of love. And that's just my opinion. Nobody kill me, like not actually, but nobody get on my case. Like, I literally believe that if you do not see the person that you're with, and just like that heart eye emoji thing, if that doesn't happen, every time you see the person that you're with, in my opinion, eventually it's going to be whatever. I believe that you should be in love with the person that you decide to spend the rest of your life with, and that is just my opinion. But it should not stop there. I believe that you should have a foundation, a financial agreement, being on the same page financially, being on the same page when it comes to raising children, being on the same page financially when it comes to everything. Respect. You have to be – one person can't respect the other person more. One person can't love the other person more. You know, it has to be where even if you do love – one person loves somebody more, there still has to be a foundation of equal respect when it comes to relationships. And I think that a lot of our views on relationships comes from you and mommy, because no matter what, no matter what you went through, you made it so that you were okay by the end of it. And you made the decisions like nobody went against the other when it came to us. And it was a relationship that was a good example, and we knew that you were still human, and you know you may have gone through things, but at the end of the day, the one thing that you always told me, Daddy, was that we were going to be okay, and we always were. And then we ended up being great people. I think, you know, we're decent, you know, not too shabby. We're not too shabby.
Well,
so
no, you know, I think the three of you turned out phenomenal.
Oh, thank you.
And your mother and I are very proud of your accomplishment and you as a person. And see, you know, the way I approach this, your mother and I, this month, by the way, I met your mother in February of 1980. This is 40 years I've known your mother.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
There isn't another person except my sister that I have known longer than your mother.
Oh,
and
wow.
I haven't been around my sister the way I've been around my mother. Your mother and I married May 1st, 1981.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the word love is not only misdiagnosed, it's overused.
Absolutely.
Love.
I agree.
Love hurts.
Yes.
It hurts in the sense that it draws you. I think a lot of people get married because they think they were in love, but they get divorced
mm-hmm.
because they come to realize they weren't. After
mm-hmm.
the word relationship, after the word relationship comes commitment. People don't have a problem with relationships. They have a problem with commitment. Like
that is true.
In the extended discussion, you know, you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
He's talking about he and Jada being together for the rest of their lives until death
mm-hmm.
do them part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's something you work on. There, you know, there are times your mother was not pleased with me. and you know, that's putting it nicely. You know, she wanted to do the alley shuffle on me sometimes. You know, but we're human beings, and we get on each other's nerves. And the reason why I never hid feelings was because I think one thing that we all do, my parents' generation was one, is that when they had a problem, they would say, okay, we'll go down the room and talk about this, which gave the concept to children that marriages were idealistic and ever wonderful and everything worked out. And all of a sudden, they come to realize in their relationship, well, this ain't like my mommy and daddy's relationship. But, yeah, it is very much like your mommy and daddy's relationship. It's just that they never let you understand that we're human beings and we get
mm-hmm.
on each other's nerves.
Mm-hmm.
There are times
mm-hmm.
your mother and I get into things, and I, you know, I have to stop. I say, Shari, we were arguing about this 25 years ago. you know, you're just in a nasty mood. And you know, you're looking for something to fight about, and you're just picking something that we talked about 25 years ago. We resolved it 25 years ago, but we rehash it because sometimes you wake up, you ain't feeling good. And the same goes for me. Sometimes I start stuff, but that's what happens in relationships. But somebody has to be the one that says, hey, you know something? We talked about this 25 years ago. We're just in one of those moods. Why don't you do what you do to calm you down, and I'll go do what I do to calm me down, and then we don't have to go through this again. We don't have nothing else to argue about. We done gone through all the arguments. Everything that would have gotten on our nerves, we already expressed ourselves. And the only thing we continue to deal with is things we've talked about over the years. And so love hurts. Love is when you want to walk away, but you choose not to walk away.
Mm.
Because it's not about I, me, and mine. It's about we, us, and ours. Those are the words
mm-hmm.
you're using. What's good for us? Not what's good for me. What's good for us? In this society, as a man,
mm-hmm.
it's a challenge. And as a man of African descent who was looked down upon anywhere as less than a man, there are internal struggles that we need counseling. We really need counseling. We need to talk about somebody, talk to somebody about what we're going through.
Yeah.
These relationships, there is no, just like what Will said, I was at my optimum with Haru. When you were born, Sasha,
mm-hmm.
there was no book that taught me how to be a father. All I knew is that I loved you. I wanted you to be in my life, and I used to take you places, and we'd hang out, and we would talk.
Aww.
I mean, I just knew I wanted to. When Candace was born, I got better at being a father because I had learned through you, Sasha. 10 years after you were born, your brother was born.
Mm-hmm.
I was a better father then because I had learned between you, Sasha, and Candace how to be a father. There is no book that helps you become a good parent.
That's
I
true.
Believe, honestly, they can tell you things. Like I can tell you, I was a teacher years before I became, I started teaching 1977. You were born in 1984. And so you're dealing with 7 years, well, give or
mm-hmm.
take, 1979, I really would say I became a full-time teacher. But I, when you were born, Sasha, in 1984, I had been a teacher since October of 79. So you're dealing with give or take 4 years. I'd been around children for 4 years. But when you were born, as a teacher, I became so much more sensitive to parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because at 3 o'clock, children would go back home.
Yep.
And I didn't have that result. But when you were born, I came to realize what happens after 3 o'clock.
Yep,
what do
I learned that.
Have to do? It's just a whole nother world. And so
it is.
In these relationships, we just have to understand there is no book. There is nothing anyone can tell you about parenting. But there is a seed in each and every one of us as a father and as a mother that is parentable.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to. But if you don't have a sense of commitment, and as far as I'm concerned, when we were talking about the emancipation and liberation of African people, look, this dynasty, this nation, this empire that black folk want to build, you ain't going to build it on baby daddy.
Mm-hmm.
If you can walk away from your partner and your spouse who has given birth to your child, if you can walk away from them, you can walk away from the nation when it gets too hot.
That's true.
Dang. Commitment means that you understand what it is to get rid of the word I, me, and mine and deal with we, us, and ours.
Mm.
We out here talk about the nation we want to build, the things we want to do, yet we're running around with 2 and 3 children that we have not. You see, you should have learned your lesson on the first one. Because if you realize that impregnating a woman wasn't your thing and you were going to walk away from her, every time you walk your dog, you should have had that dog on a leash. If you understand what I'm talking about. When I was a young man and I'd be going out on a date. See, this generation don't know it because lighters and things. But back in the day, there was a matchbook. That's how you lit. That's how you lit cigarettes. That's how you lit the oven with these a book of matches. And every time that I would I would leave the house, my mother would say, "Skip," and I'd turn around and she would throw the book of matches at me. That was a symbol because inside that book of matches it said, "Close cover before striking." Now, my mother had to do was throw that at me, and that told me everything I needed to know.
Well, that's like your story of the snake. All you got to do is say, have I ever? and we know exactly what you're going to say.
Exactly. Did I ever tell you the story about the snake? And years later,
or
you know,
dog,
when I was dealing with Oscar Brown Jr., when Trump quoted him, his daughters called me because they were on MSNBC and CNN. And his younger daughter used to come to my presentations in Chicago. And Oscar Brown Jr. was the one that wrote that poem. It came out as a poem, and then he turned it into a rap song. Now this is an elder brother. So when you're talking about rap, Oscar Brown Jr., if you're talking rap and you ain't talking Oscar Brown Jr., you ain't talking about the history of where rap came from. And they wanted to know how should they deal with the press. How could they respond? And so for 2 days, the first day they were on MSNBC, the second day they were on CNN. And the younger daughter and the elder daughter of Oscar Brown Jr. And I, we just worked through different scenarios of questions that people would ask about their father, Oscar Brown. Because I used to check him out, come to perform in New York. But be that as it may. Bottom line is when you have a child, before I met your mother, I had a job in the Board of Ed. I started working in 79. I met your mother in February of 80. And so I had a couple of months of having checks and money that was mine, along with, you know, prior jobs I had. But when you get married, the money ain't about you no more. The money is about your team. And then Sasha,
that's
you
right.
were born. So my thing was, first, what's good for Sasha, and then what's good for your mother. And
mm-hmm.
then Candace, when you were born, what's good for Candace, what's good for Sasha, what's good for your mother. When Haru was born, because it's the younger one you always have to focus on in terms of development, because they're the ones that need your attention. So I'm talking about diapers and just things that you need.
Mm-hmm.
When Candace, you were born, that's when I really started to have a relationship with Sasha. I had a relationship, a very good relationship with Sasha before, but at the moment you were born, it was important that your mother pay attention to you. So when your mother would have to pay attention to you to give you that special individual attention, that's when I would take Sasha out. So I became the other side of, because the youngest always needs the most attention because they are developing, they are the youngest, and you've got to instill things in them. So that when Sasha was born, my attention was on you, but your mother's attention was on you.
Mm-hmm.
But when Candace was born, your mother had to put more attention on you. That's when I stepped up and took more attention of you, Sasha, taking you different places, taking you to presentations, doing the kinds of things that, you know, that I always laugh about and tell you that we did.
Uh-huh.
When Haru was born,
I was on different places in the camera.
Exactly. See, there are ways that you can learn how to be a parent. But it's the father's job that I got to step in and start doing some things that I might not have been used to doing before. But I was so in love with my family. I just so enjoyed us. Because your mother used to thank me when I would take you places, and I would say, you don't have to thank me. I'm not doing this like it's a favor for you. I'm doing this because I truly enjoy being with the children.
It's sad that not more people
Will
are
Smith
like that.
The thing is that it's the civilization's problem. This is Western civilization. This is the Cronus complex. Parents, there were a lot of parents that don't really love their children. They may have enjoyed the physical act that brought the children into existence, but they didn't really enjoy the children. They don't enjoy sitting and talking to the child and developing the child. You all know that whenever we would go out, particularly to the mall, even to this day, I'm the one
you'd be
that
learning.
Takes corrects.
Yeah.
And when I go to
every
the mall,
time.
I didn't go to the mall because I was shopping.
Every time.
I went to the mall because things had to be gotten, but I used to take you. And my attention was 100% on you. It wasn't about seeing what I wanted to buy.
I love going to the mall with you.
And I gave you a lot of room to run around and to have your fun. Because, you know, that's another problem that comes out of being enslaved.
Mm.
A lot of us are so afraid of the society. We want our children to be right
that's
next to
sad.
Us. Don't move away from me.
That's sad.
Stay by me. What I used to do is I used to let you roam because, see, that's what European children, their parents let them roam and move around and do their thing and explore.
Yep.
Whereas black children are made, stay by me, hold my hand, don't move, because we're so afraid of what the society has done. The kidnapping, the enslavement. We still have the epigenetics of that experience.
Mm. That is crazy.
But when I used to take you out, I used to let you do your thing. If you wanted to stand by that window and look at that mannequin for 5 minutes, that's all right. if you wanted
that's
to go in the
Christian
store and walk around.
You.
Yeah, and that's what we do. We do that all the time.
I know.
Because those are the memories you carry when you get into this age. Because look, we're talking about it now. And so being a parent, being a mother, if I had my way, every mother, I would give a Nobel Prize. Maybe I would change it to a Mandela Prize for motherhood. And I would put every mother. You know how Andrew Yang said every family should get $1,000? Well, we could start with $1,000, but there's no price that we could give. But every mother would be given an allowance just because you're a mother.
Mm.
That's how much I respect
motherhood. That's what I'm
talking
about.
Motherhood is different from fatherhood. I understand fatherhood.
Absolutely.
I'm proud to be a father. But to be a mother, oh, my goodness. Look, the moment you were conceived, Sasha and Candace and even Haru and anybody else, the moment you were conceived, the moment, within the first minute of conception, you sent through your mother's body every part of your existence.
Mm.
Called mother wit. Your mother carries to this day. She still carries you.
Mm, I believe
she
that.
She still carries Candace. She still carries Haru. She still carries the children that did not remain with us. Every one of them is still a mother that has had a child. You still carry the essence of your child within you. Men don't do that. Men don't have that. That's just science. That's not personal. That doesn't mean I don't understand the power of being the sire, S-I-R-E, the father. I understand the power of that. I see you in me. I see my mother in you. I see Candace. I see your mother in you. I see your mother in your brother. I see me in your brother. So I understand me.
Mm-hmm.
But motherhood, oh, man, that's just, hey. That is the most challenging and the most rewarding job that is on the earth, period. And in the cosmos, if it happened like that out there.
That is so true.
And it is to be respected and honored. And the reason why our society is in the position that it is in today is because they don't, because we are under a dominant force that is run by a psychological demented thought called the Cronus Complex.
Mm.
I will do better than my parents, but I'll make sure my children can't do better than me.
Wow. That's crazy.
But it's true. We got to talk about it.
But it doesn't make any sense, like, why people feel that way, and it's very selfish. But one of the biggest
But it does when you
that,
think about It makes sense
when
you think about where the concept began.
No, it makes sense.
And once
sense,
you realize.
It makes
I was
sense.
Say, once
but
you,
what I'm saying is. Okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was saying once you realize that this is what's going on, that's when you can make that change.
But the problem is that a lot of us have We feel like we're trying to move forward for the, and I'm talking about black people. Black people feel like they're trying to move forward with the black community, but a lot of the adoptions that they have made have been assimilation to Western society. A lot of it, like how men are in charge and how women are respected and how men think that they can have all these different women. And but a lot of the things that we think are part of the hood mentality are actually Western society's rules, and they're not even something that we have come up with. If you're a man and you think that you're woke, but you are, you don't know how to treat women and you're using women, like that's a Western way of thinking. So we think that it's part of our culture, and it actually has nothing to do with our culture.
There are things that we have to have serious conversations about. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we just have to be open and honest. And, we just have to get to the point where we realize that the most cherished aspect of life is to be able to reproduce yourself. And it is a gift, it's a blessing. It's phenomenal, but I used to be a part of a program that was in a church, and it dealt with families who had children incarcerated in Rikers Island, which is the prison.
Wow.
Teach at Rikers, too, so I was familiar with Rikers. I was familiar with the parents, and they used to arrange visits of families to their loved ones. Their children, mainly young boys or men, but there, there was a high school, and I used to teach at that high school, and I also used to do staff development for the high school. And when I would talk to the parents, I would tell them, life is going to teach you the lesson. You ain't going to get away with not learning the lesson. But my bottom line was always, had you gone to your child's open school night monthly, had you followed up on your child's educational progress, there's a very good chance you wouldn't be here right now. We had 100% attendance for the families that were going to visit their children in Rikers. Had we had 100% attendance in our open school parent-teacher nights, time in, why not put it in early and avoid the latter problem?
Wow. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that people, when they're having children, they don't foresee the future. They're involved in the physical act. They're enjoying themselves. But when you're thinking about a child, they say, oh, look at the little baby. I want a little baby. Oh, how cute. I want one. But that little baby going to go to school one day, and you're going to have to give up time to go to that open school night. If your child acts up because you ain't doing what you're supposed to do, you're going to have to give up some time on your job, which is going to threaten your job.
Yep.
You don't take into consideration everything else that goes into parenting.
Mm-hmm.
I was the vice president of your school when you were in school. I was the vice president.
You got an award.
In fact, when you were in middle school, the principal, Mr. Gisolfi, told me that if there were an award for parent involvement, he said, I would personally give it to you. You remember Mr. Gisolfi in middle school?
No,
that was when you were in elementary school.
Oh. They should have made an award for you.
but the principal also told me that, when Ms. Whalen was your, I used to go in and do the Kwanzaa presentations at your Christmas show.
Yep.
I used to come in and do different programs.
As busy as you were, because there's evidence of you on videotape doing lectures and things around the world, as busy as you were, you still never missed anything. You never missed a holiday. You never missed school. You went to every single school I ever went to and then got a job. We just talked about this the other day. And then got a job at the college.
Yeah. I kept that for 12 years, and thank you very much for that. Because that was
painful.
You're
very welcome.
I worked
hard for that. I spoke to some very important people about that.
That's right. But you see, you know, what we're focused on is children are far more than what we think. There's a lot more involved. Not to mention the constant worry, if you love them and care about them, the constant worry in a society that may be against them for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Could be their culture. Could be their gender. Could be their preferences. It could be any of those things. And you worry about your child when the child leaves your house. People don't think
that's
about
what
that.
That's what I was going to say. When I've spent my whole life like so excited to one day have a child, and when it was a consideration, I never thought about the fact that I was going to have to give a black man to America. Like I didn't. You don't consider that thought when you are thinking about having children, in the process of having children, even when you're pregnant. You don't realize that you have to give your child to the world at some point. And that is one of the hardest things to consider is that, and that's why some people choose not to have children, because the world that we live in is so horrible. But something that I said to somebody one time, that the world may not deserve your child, but you do. And that is what has made it always easy for me, because when I met Christian, the day he was born and I met him, and as I see him growing and as you guys see him growing, he's amazing. And he is one of the best humans I've ever come in contact with. And I deserve him, and we deserve him as a family. We all deserve him as a family. And you don't – it's hard, and it's really, like, one of the hardest things to consider when you actually have a child, that you have to give them to the world and all the craziness that's going on. But when I spend time with Christian, it's the best time of my life to spend time with him. Like, I can't. And he's probably going to come in here and look at me because I'm talking about him. Every time I mention him, he comes in and he stares at me.
He doesn't like
listening.
To be talked about.
No, he's listening, and he thinks it's
he
funny.
He doesn't like
he
to be talked
about. He
just wrote
down the question. He does not. He just came in and asked me if I was talking about something, and I was like, "What? What does this scribble scrabble say?" Because he can't talk to me, so he's writing down questions to ask me on a piece of paper. But he is. It's amazing to spend time with children. It's amazing, like just to watch them grow and to watch them do things, and even if it's not your own child, just to watch your loved one's children grow and become somebody. And it's just absolutely like when we watch basketball games and I'm like, you're going to be on the All-Star. You're going to play All-Star weekend one day because you're really good. And that's what you want to do. Like it's amazing to consider your child in the future. And it's more emotionally charged than anything else, I think, because you have to let them become who they're supposed to become. And I think that's the hardest thing. Because you have a vision of what your kid is supposed to be, and then they probably will end up not being what you think they're going to be, or being what you think they're going to be to only appease you, and then they're not happy. So it's a very interesting dynamic, because your children chose to be your, in my opinion, your children chose to be your children. You didn't choose your kids. Your kids are an extension of you. You didn't choose them. So they have a right to be in this world and be exactly who they were supposed to be if you want the same type of respect. So it's a very fascinating situation to be, like, to be a parent and then to you know, just give them to the world and to understand that no matter what you do, they're going to one day just be independent. And hopefully all the things you've done and instilled in them has made that, you know, an easy transition for them.
There's no doubt about that. And again, in the African societies, or even in ancient societies in general, Native American, Asian, before this level, and I would go back to 2000 BC when things began to change, but I'll leave that alone.
The children were prepared, young, for life. And so they understood things about how to conduct themselves and the physicality of all things and the sacredness of children. And we're living in a society that just doesn't have that anymore. And we're battling that. And we're getting angry at our children who have not been brought up through a process of a right to pass to know, so that when you go on Twitter or you go on Instagram and you see all these wonderful and talented and intelligent and beautiful women in particular, young girls also, who are presenting themselves, searching for the attention, dressing in ways that want to create that attention.
That's not wrong.
That's it. Everybody's seeking that relationship without the commitment. But the thing is that there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with twerking. That's how African people dance. It's what's in your mind that's the problem. And Western civilization has a nasty mind.
That's a filthy mind.
You have women, young women, who walk the earth in Africa in their communities, bare-breasted and with loincloth during the day. And there is zero cases of rape, zero cases of being spoken to out of your name. And yet here in Western civilization, women can't even walk down the street fully clothed without somebody telling them something.
That is true.
In Africa and in other places where it is warm, women don't wear anything on top. Some, not here. I'm not speaking in absolutes, but many of them do not have anything on top, and some have loincloth. Nobody says anything disrespectful to them. Because it's in the mind. We're living in a filthy-minded society that has taken everything beautiful. Because remember, it's an Ice Age mentality. And so we're in a situation now where we are around people who know not the creator or the creative force. And so they're seeking love in all the wrong places. Because the first place you should seek love is within you. Because like I say, love hurts. And when you seek love within you and you decide that you are going to discipline yourself, you're going to discipline yourself. We need discipline. The way in which we talk to children about physical engagement. Remember, both of you used to put your fingers in your ears and la, 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 I can't hear you, I can't hear you. Because I used to drop it like it was hot. I used to drop it the truth.
We still do that. We still do that with you.
The thing is that I would rather you hear it from me than hear it outside wrong.
Yeah.
And one of my saving graces throughout my life was I had a mother that I could ask anything to. I could have any type of conversation with my mother, and it was never out of place. And she enjoyed the engagement and the conversation. And at the end, a lot of times she'd say, you know, Skip, you're really very intelligent. And she also thanked me for being trusting enough of her to come talk to her.
Aww.
I could ask her anything. And that's the way it is in traditional societies. A lot of times you don't have to ask because the society sets up the educational process for you to learn it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the right to pass was about. We're not living in a world like that anymore. We're living in a world where a lot of the stuff that people are listening to and learning, because I always have to check Caress, Sasha, your son and my grandson.
Uh-huh.
I'm always asking him, because he in the back seat when I got him, he laughing. I say, what you laughing at? You know, because when he's on the phone and he's on the internet, he's on YouTube. I don't know what he's looking at. And some of these crazy people will interrupt YouTube with nastiness.
Yeah.
They're crazy. But this is the world that we're in.
Yep.
Right now. And we have some serious, but the end result of all of this is Trump. So I appreciate Donald Trump because he brought a lot of this to a speedy end. Because we all have to look inside ourselves and ask ourselves, is this really where we want to go? Is this the world we want for our children? Is this the world we want for our great-grandchildren? This world that we're in right now, looking at what's going on? And people are going to have to ask that question, and they're going to have to answer that question. I'm talking about white people in particular. They're going to have to ask themselves. Because black folk have been telling them something wrong now for over 400 years. We've been telling them something wrong. And here we are in our relationship with a man who's leading us, who has been married 3 times, got 3 baby mamas, and has developed, and his third wife, I'll leave that alone, but I found out some things about her on the internet, which is very interesting. It's just very interesting how they met and the other considerations as to the role that Jeff Epstein and others played in Florida. Okay, so let's take the cobwebs up. There are pictures. There are pictures. And this is the man that's telling us morality. This is the leader of the so-called free world. Family, we got to get this together. And we have to instill it in our children, and we have to be realistic. I'm looking for 3 out of 100. That's all, just 3 out of 100.
And I think that it starts with the family. And I think that it goes back to what you were saying in the beginning, what we were talking about throughout the show. It really does. It really is. It starts with your family, because not everybody is going to be perfect. But if you do, and Mama, you tell me this all the time. You have to, you can't be good to anybody else if you're unable to be good to your nucleus family. And you don't say it like that, but that's that when we talk about it, that's what I get out of it. I can't help anybody else if I can't help my immediate family that's there with me 24/7, day in and day out, inside of my home. I can't help anybody else if I'm unable to help my family. That's why you've been so successful, Day, in your job. Not your job, but your life purpose. You've been so successful because you were good to your family. You put your family first before anything else. No matter where you were going on or what you were doing, you put your family first. And I think that that's one of the reasons why you have been so successful and why you are so loved, because people can see that. And a lot of people want that in their own lives, and because they can pick up on that energy from you, they are, you know, besides everything else that makes you great, they can pick that up on you, you know, in addition to everything else that makes you great. And I think that that is something that we need. But like you said, 3 out of 100, not everybody is going to make it to where we need to go. And I think that when we let go of trying to hold on to everybody, that's when we, you know, when you are going somewhere and you're trying to hold on to everybody, even when you're, isn't that something on a plane? Like, don't they start when there's an issue or a boat, when things go wrong, they start throwing things that they don't need overboard. I'm not saying that we should throw people overboard, but if there's people that are not willing to do what they got to do, you can't help dead weight, because dead weight is going to hold you back, and then nobody's going to make it anywhere. And it's even worse when the dead weight doesn't want to go where you're going in the first place. So I think that it's so important that we need to start having this conversation. And in a few minutes, I'm going to play a song that I think is really important, because it is, I think, where a lot of people are at right now, because there's a lot of things that are going on in our community. But one of the most important things is that we respect each other and take into consideration the young people that are involved that had nothing to do with our brokenness. So does anybody else want to add anything before I play the song?
Nope. Keep on keeping on.
Because it ain't over till we win.
Watch
out. This was such a great conversation, and I want us to stop here because I think that it was such a great conversation. I just think that it's so important that everybody that's listening goes back to your own family and to your own situations and takes into consideration, takes a look at your own situation and how you can make it better. And I think that this song makes me emotional. Even though I'm not directly connected in this specific type of situation, I think that this song makes me so emotional because it was somebody that let go of their ego and let go of how they were feeling and let go of how they were being portrayed in society and in the media and embraced at all the parties that were involved and made it better. And now, you know, once I play, you'll know who I'm talking about. All the parties involved are okay. And some of us aren't okay by the situation, but the people that are involved are okay. And in my opinion, that's really all that matters. So this really was like one of the best conversations that we had, and it started off great. And we will be back, the next time. And everybody have a good night and Hotep.
Hotep.
Hotep family.
Step brothers and God sisters who eventually slept with us.